The Siege of New Hampshire series by Mick Rowland. Book 6, The Summer of Wood and Iron. Chapter 8, Contested Passage. Martin regretted suggesting that Tyler ride in the cab of the truck. He had imagined Tyler and Charles working through their differences and finding some compromise or common ground. He had not envisioned it becoming a cage match. When they raised their voices, it carried through the cab's sheet metal. Between the buffeting of the wind and the engine noise, he couldn't make out any words. Sheesh, Martin looked at his watch. 40 minutes and they're still going at it. They must be revisiting every disagreement they've had since kindergarten. Leaving Concord, they planned to take advantage of the straight shot of I-93 as far as Ashland. David's associates suggested getting off there and going around Plymouth on Route 175, then back onto 93 after the Blair Bridge. The empty, tree-lined interstate highway was featureless and somewhat boring. Charles started their journey, keeping a reasonable speed, but as the arguments boiled on, his foot slowly got heavier on the gas pedal. At first, the trailer resumed its sleepy dog wag. With the increased speed, the wag grew into more serious oscillations. Martin could see that Charles was too busy to notice. He was embroiled in proving he was right about something. The heaviness of the truck and the lightness of the trailer meant he probably couldn't feel the trailer swaying back and forth. Martin was about to knock on the window and call their attention to the swaying trailer. He hesitated, knowing both of them would be pretty cranky. Glancing up, he saw the exit sign to Ashland. Scrubbing off speed for the exit would probably settle the trailer. He blew out a sigh of relief. The narrow and twisting nature of Route 175 would discourage higher speeds. Martin preferred to have the trailer settle down naturally than to interrupt their arguments. Charles did not slow down. The exit ramp and curve were gradual enough for the truck to hold that speed, but the curve was too much speed and side forces for the trailer. It began to thrash back and forth behind the truck like a dog shaking a rag doll in its mouth. Martin could feel the back of the truck jerking left and right. He rapped on the back window of the cab while keeping an eye on the trailer. "Hey, guys, the trailer is..." The trailer took a sharp veer to the right. Its side hit the back of the truck, and it bounced left. Its tires chirped as they hit the roadway sideways. This tossed the trailer to the right again. Charles, now aware of the problem, tried to correct with steering, but it was too late. The truck's brakes locked up. Tires squealed. The trailer flipped on its side and slid, pulling the back of the truck across Route 3 and into the ditch on the other side. Through the plume of dirt and sod, Martin caught a glimpse of some people running away. He was too busy holding on to see much more. The truck leaned to the left as it slid and threatened to throw him out. The slide stopped. The truck flattened out and rocked on its springs. Dirt rained down on Martin's head. It took a moment and a long breath to take stock of his situation. The truck sat at an angle to the road, but still upright. Martin was still in the bed. The trailer lay on its side, wheels spinning furiously in the air. At least half of their wood chip supply was gone. The driver's door popped open. Charles jumped out and ran a few steps into the tall grass before turning back to look at the truck. He had his hands on top of his head. His mouth hung open. The passenger door flung open. Tyler ran over to Charles, asking if he was okay. For a moment, Martin felt neglected. No one asked if he was okay. When Charles said that he was unhurt, Tyler slapped the side of his brother's head and launched into a tirade. Martin was then relieved that Tyler had not asked him how he was. The two brothers continued their argument. Charles was down 1 point for his bad driving. Martin hopped down to assess the damage. The trailer lay on its side, but the major components were still firmly bolted in place. The loose tools and the cover to the gasifier's hopper were missing. Martin found the cover 10 yards farther into the tall grass of the ditch. The chrome tools were easier to spot when they reflected the sun. He noticed that the tall grass wasn't simply overgrown grass. It was wheat. The grain heads were small and green, but clearly wheat. He remembered the people he saw running away. Were they tending this wheat? Looking up and around, he saw a half dozen people wearing ragged and dirty clothes. They stood in a wide arc, maybe 20 yards away from the truck and trailer. Most of them had their eyes on the two brothers who were shouting and flailing their arms. One of the onlookers, a man with a gray beard that grew outward like a lion's mane, turned to look at Martin. After a glance at the sparring brothers, he walked up to Martin.
"Hey, you okay?"
Yeah, a little beat up, but okay," said Martin.
"Yeah, I'm guessing those two are okay."
The man cast a puzzled glance at the brothers. "Well, no physical issues, apparently."
"Yeah, well, this here's the first non-guard truck I've seen on the roads in months. And it darn near ended up in my lap."
Yeah, sorry about that. He took the turn way too fast for our little trailer. Yeah, we're blessed that it doesn't look too bad. Maybe just get it back on its wheels and find the stuff that was thrown out. Still missing a little blue toolbox, Martin glanced around in the wheat.
"Hey, you want we should help you get her on her wheels again?" asked the old man.
Martin tried pushing the trailer over, but could only get it to rock a foot or so.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks for helping." "Ah, sure. Yeah, truth is, though, I'm not being helpful so much as I'm wanting to get you guys and your rig out of our wheat."
The man swept his arm a few times, beckoning his fellow workers toward the trailer. One by one, they stopped spectating the argument and pushed through the young wheat toward the truck. The old man squatted down to study the trailer's hitch.
"Yeah, it looks like she ripped the hitch clean off the ball. Yeah, you only got the chains left."
"Yeah, well, shoot," muttered Martin. "Well, let's see if we can get it back on its wheels and figure out what to do from there." The six of them pushed and rocked the trailer to get some momentum going. The clanking and motion distracted the two brothers. They stopped yelling and walked over to see what was going on. With one last push, the trailer paused for a moment at the peak of its arc before bouncing down onto its wheels.
"Ah, what's the damage?" asked Charles.
"Well, the tires still look okay," said Martin. "And all the equipment stayed bolted down. I found all the loose bits, except for the toolbox."
"Oh, you mean this?"
asked a thin woman with a too large burlap shirt. She brushed the dirt off of a small blue toolbox.
"Hey, yeah, thanks for finding that," said Martin. "Our problem is that when it flipped, it broke off the underjaw thingy that locks the hitch to the ball."
"Oh, man," whined Charles. "We can't go far with that thing just sitting on the ball."
"There, now you see what you've done," snipped Tyler. "In such a hurry that you made us later still."
"Well, if you hadn't," began Charles.
"Guys," shouted Martin,
"give it a rest. Sheesh.
Maybe we can find the jaw thingy. Let's find it, fix it, and get back on the road instead of arguing." Martin pointed up the road. "I think the trailer got up on its side back there. See those scrapes in the pavement? It probably broke just before that. Let's go see if we can find that jaw."
"Okay," said Charles. Out of his mouth, he muttered, "And I did not."
"Did too," grumbled Tyler.
"Hey, save it," scolded Martin. He turned to the others.
"It should be a wedge-shaped hunk of metal about this big." Martin held his thumbs and forefingers to make a small square.
Eight people formed a loose line across the highway and walked slowly, eyes scanning back and forth over the pavement.
"Where are you guys going in such a hurry?" asked the old man.
"Oh, Lincoln," said Martin. "We were told to take Route 175 to get past Plymouth's roadblocks on 93. The old man shook his head.
Well, you can't get around by 175 anymore either."
"What?"
said Tyler.
"But that's how they said the guard trucks got around it," said Charles.
Yep, they used to," said the old man, "until the loonies saw them doing it and then shut that one down, too."
Martin stooped to begin scooping handfuls of loose wood chips into a bucket.
The loonies?
Well, that's what I call them. Who knows what they're calling themselves anymore? said the old man, with a dismissive wave. Equity something, or peace hammers, or new green something or other. Yeah, names don't really change anything. Yeah, there's still a pack of commie hoodlums, if you ask me. Yeah, they got 175 blocked off, too.
You see? Tyler slapped Charles across the shoulder. And you were so sure that we could get around that way.
The old man chuckled to himself.
Well, there might still be a way to get around if you're sneaky.
This had both brothers lean in closer. Martin was torn between hearing more and looking for the broken hitch part. Charles's truck was not suited for anything sneaky. The old man pointed north.
My cousin's got a farm up in Holderness way. He wanted to get one of his cows up to Livermore to get it serviced. Guy up there had a bull, you see. It's not too far for a cow to walk, but the loonies had just blocked the road. They were all full of spit and polish about men and their new toll booth. But Daniel, he's always a-thinking.
The old man tapped his temple with his finger.
He wore his hunting suit and put camo netting over his cow. She was the really mild one, that one was. And walked her around east behind the high school's ice rink, and then around the soccer fields, right along the woods to go around the roadblock. When it looked like anyone at the barricade was watching his way, he stopped. Him and his cow looked like a couple of bushes against the woods. When the loonies was busy with something else, he'd move along slow. He got that cow around the loonies all the way up to Livermore, hoping she'll calve in the later winter.
Well, that doesn't do us any good, Tyler said. We got a truck, not a cow. Isn't there some other back roads up and around through the mountains?
There used to be, said the old man with a shrug. Went a storm damage brought down a load of trees up on Prospect Road. Nobody's had time or tools nor any real need, actually, to clear it all the way. That's why Daniel took his cow around back of the rink.
Mused Charles. He pulled his badly folded map from the front seat of the truck.
Where is this ice rink? Right in that corner there.
The old man poked at the map with a dirty finger.
I got to watch Danny's son play hockey there a couple of times. Parking lot comes off of Prospect Road, you see.
He pointed to a road intersecting the highway 100 yards south of the blocked intersection. The two brothers studied the map and muttered back and forth to each other.
Yeah, that worked for Danny and his camo cow, but you fellows are going to need a load of tree branches or something.
He pointed to the truck.
Well, maybe if we come up the road slow, offered Charles, keep the engine revs down, she runs quieter then. We do like he just said, using tree branches and mud. We go around that ice rink and back up onto the road.
Hey,
shouted one of the other wheat tenders,
is this it?
She held a small chunk of something over her head.
I found this in the dirt over there.
She brought it to Martin.
Hey, that is it. Oh, very cool.
Martin stared at the hitch with a furrowed brow. The bolt and lever were gone, sheared off.
Well, I'm going to need another bolt, nut, and washers.
He recalled that the generator's mounting bolts were about the right size. He could borrow one of those to secure the jaw while in transit, then return it to the generator once they were on site. The old man, apparently curious about the truck and the trailer, followed Martin around, peering over his shoulder while he worked. He told Martin about how his group had sown wheat in the medians and the right-of-way around the interstate exits. The highway department was no longer tending such lands, so they figured they could just as well grow a crop in them. Tillable acreage was scarce in the North Country.
We're blessed, though, said the old man. We're far enough south that the loonies don't bother us. They control pretty much everything within a mile or two of Plymouth. Danny's seen some forced laborers farming across the river. The loonies got guns. Danny says they've been getting ammo dropped to 'em every couple of months.
Dropped? What do you mean dropped? Asked Martin.
Oh, Danny lives close enough that he could hear the plane. But he said he'd only seen it once. A little high-wing single-engine job. Had a little parachute, too. He figures it's got to be ammo, since it was such a little box. Too little to hold much for food. The loonies do shoot a lot. Nobody else around here wastes ammo like they do.
Well, who's got any gasoline at all, let alone enough to... Martin cut short his question.
The feds had resources to fuel an airplane and supply ammunition. Why the feds would be supporting a remote gang in the mountains didn't make a lot of sense. A more immediate mystery was how Farnham expected to get his train through Plymouth on a regular basis if it was this much trouble just to drive a truck around them. Martin was starting to see Tyler's side more than Charles. With the motor mount bolt in place, the trailer's hitch was functional again. Charles adjusted his approach to the ongoing argument of whether to continue north or go back. He appealed to his brother's defiant streak and his pride. Who were those loonies to think that they could stop Tyler Hendrick? If anyone could get past their stupid roadblock, it would be him. The new approach worked. Tyler's mental wheels turned. He proposed, then dismissed, the idea of camouflage, like Daniel's cow. The truck was too big and too loud to sneak anywhere.
"Yeah, well, what if we got up ahead of speed?" asked Charles, "and then coasted around them."
"We can't coast all the way around those soccer fields," said Tyler. "The ground'll probably be too soft."
All three of them studied the map. The old man peered between Martin and Tyler's shoulders.
"Well, the soccer fields are almost past the checkpoint," said Martin. "Maybe we gun the engine at that point and just run for it."
Maybe.
Tyler stroked his chin and frowned at the map.
"But I bet they'll be on alert when they see us coming. They could anticipate us going around behind the rink."
"Okay," said Martin. "What about this? What if we turn off on this road here, Prospect Road, and make like we're going to go around them to the east?"
"Oh, you can't go around," interrupted the old man. "That road up ahead's all blocked with trees."
"I know, but maybe they don't know that, or they'll figure that we don't know. It doesn't matter."
Martin turned to the old man. "This Prospect Road, it goes uphill from here?"
"Oh, sure. It heads up over the ridge. That's where the windfall is."
"Well, good," continued Martin. "So, what about this? We know that they'll see us coming up 175. Can't help that. But we'll turn right onto this Prospect Road, drive up a ways so that they think we're going to try to go the long way around. But we turn around, say, here at this fork. We'll coast back downhill, maybe with the engine off, so it's only tire noise. Turn onto the parking lot and coast as far around behind the building as momentum will carry us. When your speed is getting low, you dump the clutch and restart the engine. I'll use the startup fan to keep the gasifier up to speed. We should be halfway across the fields before they hear us."
Tyler nodded.
"I like that. They will hear us, though."
"And they'll start shooting at you," added the old man. "Sure as heck."
"He was telling me that they have lots of ammo," said Martin, "and they're eager on the trigger." Martin frowned at the truck for a moment.
Well, we've still got those steel plate panels that we fitted for our run down 101 with Kutch, remember?
"Yeah, the one in the driver's door is still in there," offered Charles.
"Well, good. We'll put the two loose ones over on the left side so Martin and I have some cover."
"You're going to ride in the back?" Martin asked.
You and I might have to lay down some suppressive fire," said Tyler. "I can't do that from the passenger side. I'll help you get the panels in place. You're not going to drive fast and crazy, right?"
He stared at Charles with narrowed eyes.
"Oh, no," Charles shook his head. "I'll be smooth and steady."
The half-dozen wheat farmers stood in a loose line along the road. They waved as the truck and the trailer puttered down the pavement. Martin was happy to see that their skid had not torn too deeply into their wheat. The travel up Route 3 past Little Squam Lake was uneventful. Charles was careful to slow down for the turn onto 175. The trailer behaved itself. Tyler and Martin unbolted the irregular steel plates from the left side and corner of the flatbed's fence. Martin used a screwdriver to bore a crude hole in the wooden top rail for each of the panels to have at least one bolt holding them up. They weren't large panels, perhaps 18 by 24 inches, barely enough to crouch behind, but they were at least some cover. Martin noticed Charles waving his arm excitedly out of the window. He pointed ahead. They were coming up to the intersection of Prospect Road. The truck's motor was far from quiet, as it had been laboring up the gentle uphill climb. The tree cover beside the road had thinned out. A couple hundred yards ahead, they could see cars and logs set across the highway. Heads bustled back and forth behind the barricade as they watched the truck approach.
"Nice and casual,"
Tyler shouted down to Charles. The truck and trailer made a smooth right turn onto Prospect Road. Martin could see people pointing at them and thought he could hear shouting, though it may have just been his imagination. The truck's engine clattered noticeably as they began up the long grade. Charles pulled over at the broad Y intersection, roughly a quarter mile from where they got off the highway. All three men gathered beside the trailer.
"Okay," began Charles. "I got a good look at the parking lot and the entrance as we rolled by. I'll have to swing as far to the left as I can before I make as wide a right turn as possible. It looks like a pretty straight shot to go behind the building."
"I saw at least a half dozen people at that checkpoint," said Martin. "We got their attention when we came up 175.
"Agreed," added Tyler. "They're on alert now, so we won't get much, if any, surprise factor."
"Hopefully, our coasting approach won't give them another heads up. Let's lash down everything loose in the trailer," said Charles. "The turn into the parking lot won't be gentle."
Have you ever restarted this thing from a coast?" asked Martin. "I mean, with the gasifier?" Charles stared with a furrowed brow for a moment.
"I did some rolling starts years ago, when the starter died. I used to park with the nose downhill, coast a ways, and then dump the clutch. But I haven't done that with this new rig, no."
"How many rounds did you bring?" asked Tyler.
Martin glanced down at the mag carrier on his belt. "Well, I've got 10 in the gun, 10 in a spare mag, a box of 20 in my bag. What about you?"
20 in the gun, 20 in a spare mag. I didn't have much more than that at home. What about you, Charles?"
About the same, 35 total. I really wasn't expecting a firefight, but even if I was, this was about all I had left anyhow."
"Well, we can't lay down much for suppressive fire," said Tyler, shaking his head. "Charles, you'll just have to get us out of there as fast as you can."
Charles tightened his jaw muscles and nodded slowly.
"Okay, then, let's do this."
The truck rolled slowly at first. Forward motion without the engine noise felt vaguely mysterious. As they gained speed, Martin checked his grip on the vertical wooden stake with one hand and his other hand on his carbine. Tyler was bracing himself for the upcoming turn as well. The trees lining the road began to thin. Glimpses of the brown ice rink building appeared between the trees. The parking lot entrance was coming up. Thus far, their descent had been quiet. Charles drifted to the far left side of the road. He scrubbed off some speed with the brakes, but not hard enough to make him squeal. Martin tightened his grip on the wooden stake. The truck leaned left precariously as it made a wide right turn faster than anyone would normally drive. The tires made a much louder scuffing sound than Martin expected. Nothing in the truck or trailer clanked or rattled. Charles straightened out and coasted across the parking lot toward the back of the athletic building. They would become exposed to view in just a few seconds. Martin twisted the fan's bypass valve. When Charles let out the clutch, the engine would draw from the gasifier. He crouched behind his steel plate, the carbine thrust between the top and second boards. Bumping off of the pavement onto the athletic field sod, the truck slowed suddenly. Martin was thrown forward. He had to brace himself to restore his view between the stake side's boards. The junk of the roadblock came into view between two groups of trees. For a moment, Martin thought they could traverse that gap and be gone before anyone in the roadblock could react. His optimism didn't last long. Charles dumped the clutch to restart the truck's engine. The rig slowed quickly, as if he had stepped on the brakes. Martin toppled against the front fence again. Tyler nearly fell, but caught himself. Charles tried the clutch again, but the engine only bucked and wheezed. The truck stopped. Silent. The sound of shouts carried across the soccer field. A shot whizzed by, then a second. A tuft of sod flipped up beside the truck.
"Charles!"
shouted Tyler. He lowered his eyes to his rear sight. He sent off two rounds. Martin sighted on a trio of heads above the hood of a blue sedan. He aimed for the sheet metal in order to make more noise. Crack, crack. The starter motor whined, but the engine did not fire. Martin sent off one more round before scooting over to check the gasifier's fire. The door was hot. The fire inside glowed bright orange.
"Try it again," shouted Martin.
More shots cracked from the roadblock. One hit the truck, someplace. Martin could feel it and hear it. The starter motor whined again. This time, a few cylinders fired, but not enough to keep the engine running. Tyler fired two more rounds at the barricade. A few heads that had popped up quickly disappeared. Martin sighted on the blue sedan and sent a round into its windows. An incoming shot hit Martin's steel plate. The impact knocked it into Martin's knees, throwing off his balance. Tyler sent a round into the blue sedan. The starter groaned again. This time, the engine caught. Charles revved the engine gently to get the gases flowing faster. An incoming shot pierced the top rail of the fence with a hollow thwack. Charles revved the engine again and dumped the clutch in first gear. The truck leapt forward, toppling both Martin and Tyler. Charles steered right toward what looked like dirt ruts along the perimeter of the field. The ground was firmer. Within a few seconds, the roadblock was hidden by the trees.
"There's the highway," shouted Martin. He pointed at a gap in the trees ahead of them. "It looks bumpy. Hold on."
"Get ready to fire behind," shouted Tyler. "They could try to chase us."
The truck bounced hard over the mound of brush and weeds lining the road. Martin was thrown sideways. He was beginning to feel like a marble in a box. The trailer flew up momentarily as it hit the brush. As the truck turned onto the highway, Martin could see several men run around the gentle curve behind them. They stopped to shoulder their weapons. Tyler, laying prone atop the pile of wood chips, sent two rounds skipping down the pavement. The men dove left and right toward the brush. Martin was about to fire a round down the road, but the curve of the highway hid the shooters behind the trees. Martin felt the truck's engine starting to miss. He could not remember the last time he had fed chips into the gasifier. He quickly dumped in two scoopfuls. "Take it easy for a while, Charles," he called down to the driver's window. "It ran low. It'll take a few minutes to get back up to speed."
"We did it," said Tyler.
He gestured a high five to Martin, who responded with a little less enthusiasm. "We got lucky back there," said Martin.
"Luck? Ha! The element of surprise and the persuasive power of suppressive fire. Nobody likes getting shot at."
"Oh, you got that right," muttered Martin under his breath. "Well, they won't be surprised a second time. They'll have that route blocked, too."
Yeah, probably. We'll have to find some other way back south when we're done."
Martin scoffed. "We might be able to find a safer way south. But what about that Farnham's stupid train? The tracks go right through the middle of that hornet's nest."
"Yeah, that Farnham guy's got a lot of explaining to do when I see him," grumbled Tyler. "This whole thing is looking more and more impossible. And if that stupid brother of mine hadn't—"
Now, don't start that again," said Martin. "He didn't know it'd be like this. None of us did."
"You're right." Tyler's eyes narrowed. "It was that Farnham character. He knew."
As I'm recording this episode, the last snows of winter have just about melted away. I took the snow thrower off the tractor and swapped out the snow tires on the car for its summer tires. It's time to start prepping the gardens for planting, although that won't happen until mid-May. The pear tree's buds have swollen and will pop open soon. There looks to be quite a few flower buds, too. I'm really hoping we don't get another killer frost in May like we did last year. Our last frost in May isn't usually a hard one. Hard enough to nip tender seedlings, but it doesn't usually hurt the pear or the apple blossoms. That frost last year hit a lot of orchards around here pretty hard. Some of them lost almost everything of that year's crop.
Now that the snow is gone, I uncovered my cabbages from last year, and it didn't look too promising. Out of the 9 or so plants I mulched over, there were only 3 stems showing. On the optimistic side, I do see some green on those stems, so maybe there's hope. Gardening is all about being patient. Now that the days are getting warmer, I set out the fake eggs in one of the nest boxes, hoping to coax one of the hens into going broody. I'm not confident that any of them will, but maybe if one of them sees a nest full of eggs, it'll trip the maternal instinct switch in her little chicken brain, and she'll go broody. After the rains subside, it'll be time to get out the lawn care gear and to set up the log splitter to tend to those trees we took down while the pond ice was still thick enough to walk on. Walking around the property a bit, between the rain showers, revealed a few more treetops that were broken off during that last storm. They're not huge as far as windfalls go, but they each amount to several armloads of firewood. That's worth it. Every little bit helps. So we're heading into another busy season around the homestead, with its ongoing challenge to make time to write and narrate, too. At this point, I'm not quite sure what'll be up for next week's episode, but we'll have something for you. Take care, and thanks for listening.